The next case on the court's en banc argument schedule for today is the State of Nevada Department of Business and Industry, Division of Insurance versus Payroll Solutions Group Limited, Inc. et al., case number 50678. I assume there'll be more than one person arguing for the appellant, or?
Yes, Mr. Chief Justice, I will be doing the opening argument for the state, and co-counsel will be doing the rebuttal.
All right, then, Mr. Chesney, you may begin.
Thank you. And I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for the rebuttal argument, if I may. If it pleases the court, my name is Shane Chesney, Senior Deputy Attorney General. I represent the State of Nevada Division of Insurance and my client, the Insurance Commissioner for the State of Nevada. This is a case of unauthorized and largely unregulated insurance. The respondent in this case, Payroll Solutions, is by definition an insurer under Nevada law because their employee benefit plan is a multiple employer welfare arrangement, otherwise known as a MEWA. And MEWAs are, for purposes of Nevada law, an insurer. As an insurer in Nevada, you are required to have a certificate of authority in order to transact insurance. Payroll Solutions does not have the certificate of authority, but it does transact insurance. By definition, that constitutes the unlawful, unauthorized transaction of insurance. Unauthorized insurance is a danger to the citizens of the state. Regulations are intended to avoid insolvency and have reserve requirements. Additionally, licensed insurers pay taxes, a substantial amount of taxes and premium, and also they contribute to the state guarantee fund in case of an insolvency of their plan so that the insureds have benefits. Being unregulated means none of these protections are there for the state. Now, originally, Payroll Solutions claimed that it didn't need a certificate of authority because it was a single self-insured employer under ERISA, the federal law, and if it were that type of arrangement, it would be exempt from state regulation. The state challenged, however, this wrong contention, as it was clearly not in accordance with the applicable law of the state or the federal law. The state prevailed at hearing, and Payroll Solutions was ordered to stop transacting insurance, pay a fine, and back taxes. Payroll Solutions sought judicial review of that decision that found it to be an unauthorized insurer, and while that case was pending, Payroll Solutions prevailed on our legislature to change the law that it had relied on, in this case NRS 616B691, to now state that it was an employer for purposes of sponsoring and maintaining benefit plans, and inserted the key language, including for purposes of ERISA. Thus, it attempted to codify its original legal argument that it was a single employer plan under ERISA, regulated by ERISA, and thus exempt from state law. Unwittingly, however, what Payroll Solutions really accomplished was to render that very statute, NRS 616B691, with its amendment, now preempted from state regulation under ERISA, and that was an express preemption because it specifically referenced ERISA.
Now, that argument wasn't made below, correct?
That argument was made by the state at judicial review in front of the district court. Interestingly enough, Payroll Solutions did not comment on it, nor did the judge at district court comment on it. As a matter of fact, when she granted the petition for judicial review, she said, essentially, the petition for judicial review is granted because this clarifies the prior law. And that was the only reason stated.
And thus making it retroactive.
Yes, exactly. She interpreted it as being retroactive. And, of course, that was an issue in front of the court. We argued it wasn't retroactive and it wasn't a clarification of the law because it, in fact, completely changed the law from what it originally said. For instance, the original law said you shall not self-fund employee benefit plans, including for purposes of Title 57, which is the insurance code. Well, the clarified law changed that to say you can self-fund insurance benefit plans for purposes of Title 57. So Oh, and it also, it first explicitly referenced the insurance code, then that was completely taken out, and it only referenced the workers' comp section.
Did the state have the ability to do this in the first place, to define a term of art that's within ERISA? Is there a carve-out provision that the state says they can do that within?
Clearly, Justice Douglas, the state does not have the power to define a federal law term under ERISA in state law, especially if it controverts and conflicts with the state law. And that's exactly what this did. I will get to the preemption argument after I summarize the rest of this quickly. The U.S. Department of Labor and the National Association of Insurance Commissioners concur with the state's position that this new version of the law is preempted. And now before this court, Payroll Solutions' argument has changed, and now they state that rather than for ERISA purposes they're a single employer, they state for state-based insurance law purposes they are a single employer, and that the legislature had the power to do this under the MIWA exception, which is the exception in ERISA that allows states to regulate insurance law for multiple employer welfare arrangements. Ironically, they had claimed the whole case that they weren't a MIWA until it was pointed out in briefing and at judicial review that this single employer ERISA statute was now preempted. Why is it preempted? The U.S. Supreme Court in Shaw stated that Section 1514E of ERISA, which is the broad preemption charge, supersedes any and all state laws insofar as they may now or hereafter relate to any employee benefit plan. The point was reiterated again in the U.S. Supreme Court case of Holiday that stated the broad preemption portion of the statute is conspicuous in its breadth and establishes an area of exclusive federal concern subject to every state law that relates to an ERISA employee benefit plan. Hence, the backing off that it's an ERISA benefit plan. Now they're saying it's for state purposes. The Ninth Circuit in Castingway held that ERISA's general preemptive reach is broad and regulates state law even of general application, not just those that reference ERISA benefit plans. Well, of course, this one does. Specific reference to ERISA in a state statute rendered the statute preempted was another holding by the U.S. Supreme Court in Mackey v. Lanier. The new version of NRS 616B691 specifically references ERISA. The Ninth Circuit in Ingersoll Rand, if a statute relates to an ERISA benefit plan, it is likewise preempted. Now, NRS 616B691 states, the leasing company shall be the employer of its leased employees for purposes of sponsoring and maintaining benefit plans, including without limitation for purposes of ERISA. I mean, it is on its face preempted.
Well, what do you do with 29 U.S.C. 1144 B6A, which seems to, even if your preemption argument is acknowledged, refer the decision whether to regulate a MIWA back to the state and allows the state, by statute, to regulate or punt?
I'm referencing, you said 1144 B2B, Your Honor?
B6A.
B6A. All right, that is known as the MIWA exception. And that is exactly what...
Isn't that what we're talking about here?
Yes. But MIWA is an ERISA-defined term. And a MIWA is a benefit plan or other arrangement which provides benefits to the employees of two or more employers. Now, in this case, at hearing, it was established Payroll Solution is the statutory employer, and it does the payroll. But all the client employers are the ones that actually regulate the work hours, the wages, the vacation, the benefits, the tools and equipment, direct the work. Under the Supreme Court case of Darden, they are the common law employer.
So well, they only define employee in Darden.
Well, you have to, because if you look at the MIWA definition, it says a MIWA is an arrangement that offers benefits to the employees of two or more employers. So you have to figure out who the employees are and whether or not there are two or more employers. Darden looks at the employee-employer relationship, determine if that in fact exists. Now, that does not in fact exist with Payroll Solutions. They are not the common law employer. They are merely a, if you will, a co-employer at best. So if you have a co-employer, you still have another employer that is actually controlling the work and everything. And I would point out that they can seem to concede in their new argument that they are, in fact, a MIWA, though they hadn't all along. So they are a MIWA, and ERISA defines what a MIWA is. We can't redefine that and say that now they're a single employer plan for purposes of ERISA.
Why can't you? I mean, it's a roundabout way for the statute to get there. I'll grant you that. But it seems to me that what Justice Hardesty said really applies on 616B, 691-2, before or after the amendment. And that is, we can't legislate inconsistently with ERISA except for in the area of a MIWA. But in this case, they want to say that even though otherwise it might be a MIWA as to which we could regulate, we want to turn that regulation back over and have it treated as a single employer plan for purposes of ERISA, i.e., not be subject to Nevada 683 regulations. And we have a statute that says if there's a conflict between 616B and 683, 616B controls. That's 616A-022. The insurance code goes by the wayside if you have a conflict between those sets of statutes. So even though it's inelegantly worded, their argument really, I'm having trouble with the preemption argument that saying we will treat MIWAs as if they were single employer plans and therefore not subject to state regulation, but rather only regulated by federal, except to the extent they're self-insured under the subparagraph 3, they have to comply with that. Not a good way to state it, okay, but we're not regulating anything that we're not allowed to regulate under the MIWA delegation. Long speech, but that's the issue that's troubling me.
Well, a few quick answers. For state law purposes, there's no law that says this, that you can open up an insurance operation just because you sponsor an employee benefit plan and not be regulated. They're still a MIWA, even under this law, because they still employ two or more employers. Secondarily, under the MIWA exception, the state can only go and legislate as far as the MIWA exception is concerned, and it specifically states, in the case of an uninsured, which means not fully insured, multiple welfare arrangement, any law of any state which regulates insurance, which this arguably doesn't, and not to the extent inconsistent with the preceding sections of ERISA, which this clearly is. So within the MIWA exception, it's not unlimited broad. The state can do whatever it wants. It's got to be regulating insurance and not inconsistent with ERISA. Now, to claim a MIWA as a single employer plan is clearly inconsistent with ERISA, and 616B is not nominally regulating insurance. It's in the workers' comp section or employee leasing. So on those two counts, it goes beyond the scope that MIWA 29 U.S.C. 1144B6A allows to the states with regard to that regulation.
But by its terms, it only wants to regulate a benefit plan.
Well, if it's not an ERISA benefit plan, the state gets to regulate it. The only way it can be preempted from state regulations is it's an ERISA benefit plan. And there's no way that this is a single employer ERISA benefit plan. Any other questions?
Mr. Chesney, you're eating into your colleague's time.
Yes. Let me yield.
Okay. We'll hear then from Mr. Behiel.
Mr. Chief Justice and Justices, may it please the Court. I'm Abram Behiel, and together with Dan Polsenberg, we represent the respondents in this case. The Court ordered the parties to be prepared to discuss whether ERISA preempts NRS 616B.691, subsection 2, as amended. The answer to that is very simple. There is no preemption. And the reason the answer is so simple is because of the statute that you directed Mr. Chesney to. 29 U.S.C. 1144B6A explicitly carves out a MIWA from within the realm of ERISA, and it grants to the states a choice of whether or not to regulate. And to refer to the amicus brief that was filed
But the problem seems to be that in making that carve-out, does that allow the state to redefine a MIWA from the way it's defined under ERISA?
I understand that that's the issue, and I don't think that it's a problem, though. The state legislature recognizes that it can't unwind an act of Congress. What it can do, though, is implement authority that has been left to the states by Congress, as with Section 1144B6A. Congress said, states, you may choose to regulate as you see fit. The Nevada legislature saw fit to define this particular type of entity as a single employer.
Within that regulation, I guess coming back to the question, can they define differently than the ERISA definition? That's the starting point for this question that was presented to you.
I think the answer is yes, because they're not redefining federal law. They're defining how that federal law coordinates with state law. For the purposes of state law, the Nevada
law. So we would allow, in this case, if the feds have called it a cow, the state can then redefine it as a horse to go forward, is what you're saying, by making up a new definition.
If the feds have said that for the federal purposes it's a cow, but for state purposes you can call it a horse, then yes. And that's what the statutory grant in ERISA does. That's exactly what it does.
Don't we have a slightly different position, though, that's Supreme Court, by looking at Darden and applying it slightly and coming at it from a different fashion? Haven't they gone against the position you're taking?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that one?
If I look at the Supreme Court's opinion in Darden, they came at it slightly differently, but they would, it would seem, disagree with the position you're taking.
I think superficially it looks like it disagrees. Something that we need to look at with Darden, aside from Darden's attempt or actually defining an employee as opposed to an employer, Darden was taken within the context of an ERISA benefits claim. When you look at the overall reason for ERISA, it's to make sure that benefits are paid promptly without getting bogged down in breach of contract and bad faith and other types of state law claims. So when you look at Darden, the issue there is whether the employee is a part of a group plan, an employee benefit plan, for those purposes. That's distinct from saying, or that's distinct from the analysis of whether that type of Shaw-type preemption and that Darden agency analysis applies to statutory preemption, especially in light of Congress's explicit carve-out that says that a MIWA can or cannot be regulated by a state as it deems fit.
Is there any difference in our situation than the 2006 ruling in Idaho, Employers Resource Management Company versus Department of Insurance?
I think with that decision, I frankly think that they just got it wrong, because what they did not look at was this statutory carve-out from Section 1144B6A that says, with regard to the MIWA, the state has the choice of whether or not to regulate. It skipped an integral part of the legal analysis that I think that we have to look at here. And so while I can't find in that decision any factual distinction, I think the legal distinction is clear. A few other points that I would like to make. Preemption, it simply can't apply, and I tried to point this out in the brief. The division makes much ado about the respondents changing their argument and shifting gears, but in reality, our message has never changed. We've been able to refine our argument because as we try to explain to the division how this operates, we're having to use different words. We're trying to convey the exact same message. And this statute, even with the additions from 2007, it operates exactly the same way that it operated in 1993. In 1993, when confronted with the choice given to it by Congress of whether or not to regulate a MIWA, the Nevada legislature said that for a PEO or an employee leasing company, it shall be deemed the employer of its leased employees for any benefit plans. The employer is clearly distinct from words like an employer, one of many employers, or multiple employers. By the time we get to 2007, the Nevada legislature kept that language intact. an employee leasing company is still deemed the employer of its leased employees for purposes of sponsoring and maintaining any benefit plans. The additional language for purposes of ERISA, all that does is coordinate with ERISA's explicit grant of authority to the legislature, because ERISA's purpose with EMEWA is to give that choice of regulation to the state.
What do you do with 683A083 that says an insurer is a multiple employer welfare arrangement as defined in 29 USC 1002? That's their doorway into regulation.
That's absolutely right. That is the doorway into regulation, but that door is closed because the legislature decided, in light of having this multiple employer definition for an employee leasing company, it's also going to have a single employer definition. It coordinates, not elegantly like you said, but it still coordinates logically, and it coordinates the way that Congress intended for states to choose whether or not to regulate this type of an entity. You know, something that I wanted to point out, and I departed from this a little bit, in the amicus brief, there's a provision in there, page 9, beginning line 10. Even the amicus, the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, state that the provision that we're talking about in ERISA, section 1144, and here they refer to it by the section number 514B6, ERISA allows the states to decide whether or not, and it states there explicitly, or not regulate MIWAs as they see fit. The amicus, though, they're challenging the manner in which that the legislature has seen fit to do this regulation, or to exempt a PEO from regulation. And the problem with that position is that it doesn't carry out the purpose of ERISA in granting to the states the ability of whether or not to regulate. Because if a state cannot say that in light of a multiple employer for state purposes, that you can have a single employer deemed for state purposes, it changes the congressional grant of authority to a mandate to regulate, as opposed to the choice. And the choice, the use of the word may, is explicit in section 1144B6A.
Counsel, in footnote 9 of your brief, you identify 34 states that have approached the definition here. I haven't had an opportunity to compare these various statutes, but do all of these states define this the same way that Nevada has?
No. In fact, the reason for that footnote is to address in part the amicus concerns of a PEO being some sort of rogue entity that is coming to the state to try and evade insurance regulation. By showing that there are other states that have enacted PEO legislation, it shows that this is an industry which, even though it began late 80s, early 90s, it is evolving, it is expanding, it is legitimate. But as it relates specifically to an exception from the MIWA status on the state level definition, I can draw your attention to the Oklahoma statutes. The Oklahoma statutes, which are referenced in the brief, state explicitly, and I might say, you know, more elegantly, but it touches upon the same problem that you're trying to resolve here. The Oklahoma statutes state that a single PEO shall not be deemed a MIWA. So their reference to a MIWA is even more explicit than what the Nevada legislature has done, even though it achieves the same purpose. Oklahoma statutes never been found to be preempted because, as we've argued here, they cannot be preempted when ERISA itself grants this authority to the states.
Have they been challenged?
That part I don't know. I'm only able to look at the reported decisions.
That's the big question. How many other states in your research, you'd indicated 34 states approach this issue. How many other states have tried to define employer?
On that part, I can't give you a firm number.
Are there any?
Yeah, I know that there's more than, I do know that there's more than Oklahoma. I believe Oklahoma, Texas, Florida, that I can confirm offhand with other states. I unfortunately don't know those offhand for you today. Justices, what I would like to say is that for the reasons that I've argued here today, I believe that the decision of the district court must be affirmed. The threshold issue was properly identified in the order telling us what to prepare for. I just don't think that the counter arguments that have been presented by the appellants can be, they just can't be validated under ERISA's grant of power to the state. It also unwinds the very purpose of ERISA telling the states that they may decide to regulate. Because if the appellant's position is adopted, it changes the may into a must. It changes the, that would be an actual change of congressional intent and congressional wording. At this point, I'd like to ask if there are any other questions.
Any questions? I don't think so.
Thank you very much, Justices.
Okay. All right. Ms. Gregoria, would you like to complete the appellant's argument?
My name is Joanna Gregoria for the Division of Insurance. I'd like to point out a few issues raised by the respondent. Yes, MIWAs are permitted, states are permitted to regulate or not regulate MIWAs. And our legislature had an opportunity to pass a statute which would simply say PEO offered MIWAs are not subject to state insurance regulation. That would be permitted. However, redefining what is a MIWA for purpose of ERISA is not what's within the MIWA exception. First of all,
so you don't take issue with the legislature's intent to punt on this subject. You take issue with the way they did it and the way they worded it.
If, in fact, that was the intent of the legislature, and I don't believe it was, but that's that is not an issue here. I believe that the legislature decided whether to regulate MIWAs in 1985, when it passed all the insurance code provisions regulating MIWAs. And if it wanted to carve out an exception for PEO offered MIWAs, it would have done so by simply stating PEO offered MIWAs are not subject to state insurance regulation. It, however, didn't do so. The only purpose of the amendment was to codify Payer Solutions' argument that they're a single employer ERISA plan, and that's the only type of plan that would be preempted from state regulation, and that's simply what state cannot do. MIWA exception, as my colleague
pointed out. How is that any different, though, from what you concede the state could have passed, which is to say a PEO offered MIWA is not subject to state insurance regulation?
That is different because what happened in this case is basically Payroll Solutions has stated, we are a MIWA, but for purposes ERISA, we are a single employer plan. That is not within the language of the MIWA exception. First of all, it is arguable whether 616B691 is even can qualify as a regulation of insurance under the pilot case, pilot life, which defines what regulating insurance really means. It is our opinion that it is not. Even if it's if it is, it is inconsistent with ERISA, and as such is not within the MIWA exception. MIWA exception is leaves everything else preempted. Only regulation of insurance as pertaining to MIWAs is permitted to states, and that is not what 616B691 does. That's the first point. Secondly, I wanted to point out the Oklahoma and other statutes that the respondent has pointed out, none of them have done what Nevada has done, meaning redefine an ERISA term. They have basically created regulations specific for POs, they are still regulated, actually. They have specific regulations that govern POs, and none of them redefine a MIWA under ERISA to be a single employer plan under ERISA. If we accept Payroll Solutions' argument that for state purposes they are a MIWA but transformed into a single employer plan, that can be only for state purposes, which means that they are not preempted under ERISA because only single employer ERISA plans are preempted from state regulation. So they basically, if we accept their argument, they're a single employer plan still subject to state insurance regulation and all the laws that govern transaction of insurance.
Mr. Gregory, I have another question for you. It appears as though the district court concluded that the amendment ended the question on this matter. If this court were to conclude that the amendment should not have been treated as retroactive, shouldn't this court simply remand this matter back to the district court for further proceedings?
It is our position that this honorable court's this honorable court reviews the record as far as the hearing officer's decision, the administrative decision, and not the district court's decision. And if there is an error of law under 233B, then the decision of the district court will be affirmed and the hearing officer's decision will be reversed. It's reviewed de novo, and
well, this is why it's a bit awkward, because my understanding is that the division didn't raise the issue in front of the hearing officer regarding preemption.
Because the original language of the statute was not preempted. It never addressed ERISA plans. It was for state purposes only. It stated that...
Well, this gets to my question.
I'm sorry, yes.
It sort of sounds like this court concludes that the amendment was not an appropriate amendment for resolving this, or is somehow in conflict, which is as far as the district court went, then maybe the district court ought to re-examine the original statute in the context of the preemption question.
My understanding is that this honorable court reviews whether the hearing officer has, if the amendment never existed, if the hearing officer has exceeded its authority or her authority, if it followed the guidelines of 233B, and if so, if there was no, if she did not exceed her authority, then her decision should be affirmed, regardless of what happened after, because...
Well, it doesn't look like the hearing officer addressed the preemption argument on the statute as it originally existed. Is that true?
There was no preemption argument as far as the original statute, because the original statute, as it had no connection to ERISA other than Payroll Solutions' creative interpretation.
Okay. All right. Are there any other questions by my colleagues? Thank you, Ms. Gregorian. Mr. Chesney, thank you. And Mr. Beheel, for your arguments and your briefs. The matter will stand submitted.